if you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yowza! Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much, RJ, and also RJ's guest, Michael Anthony. Michael and I spoke yesterday. He contacted me because of this issue, ongoing problem with my hand and infection and stuff. And Michael Anthony is hooking me up with some stuff to kill the infection and try to get my finger working again, which I did a little bit of research last night. Going over some stuff. Again, I am not the biggest fan of modern medicine. When Ralph Nader's group, and keep in mind I am no fan of Ralph Nader himself, his politics, his Green Party, his Marxist views, but when his group comes out and shows very viable evidence that the medical community, modern medical community, kills, is the word that they use, 300,000 people a year due to medical negligence of one kind or another, either misdiagnosis or overdiagnosis or just simply treating the wrong thing. Drug, I guess, concoctions where the interactions are poor and they cause, other issues and people die or just all kinds of stuff. So I'm not a big fan of the modern medicine deal, but, so I looked up and I found a number of things. It looks as though one of the teeth from the cat hit a tendon, which connects from the from the wrist through the back of my hand up into my right index finger, aka trigger finger, and that is why I've got excess swelling just in that finger and lack of motion, and it's very tight. So that tendon is obviously inflamed and trying to repair. I don't know how it's going to go with this cat bite. However, Michael Anthony did say that he was going to get me the right stuff, which should get that fixed up. So hopefully within a couple of days after Christmas, I will get that. Speaking of Christmas, man, it is close. 2 days away. I will be here tomorrow, not on Christmas. As a matter of fact, all of the hosts, graciously, get Christmas Day off. So it's actually going to be a 3-day weekend for us, unless we have a little bit too much eggnog and we're not around on Monday either. That is a possibility with yours truly. You never know. Today, actually, is my day. When the show is done, I got a couple of errands to run. Go home, grab my girlfriend. We got to go get all of the treats, all of the stuff, all the yummies, all the goodies for Christmas dinner. And this is going to be an intimate Christmas. It's just going to be my girlfriend, myself, and my eldest daughter, who is coming in from Vegas. She's 19, working on 20. And it's just going to be the three of us, which will be nice. I will be going down to visit my younger daughters and seeing them. Usually they come up for a week between Christmas and New Year's. However, this year it's 2 days. It's 2 full days in the car. It's a full day up here and it's a full day back. And they're not excited about the idea of that considering some of the weather that we've been having. So I'm just going to go see them for a few days. Anyhow, with that being said, we're going to go over shotgun forens and some emails I've been exchanging with a buddy of mine, Eric Severson, from the Appleseed Project, about lighted forens, some of the things to look for, and some of the things to be aware of. So, and that's, we're talking on a pump shotgun, guys. A lighted foren, they're available for semi-auto shotguns, as well as pump shotguns. We're going to talk about those when we return, so stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, welcome back. So I love getting listener email. By the way, the email address is bill@2aradio.com. The website is 2aradio.com. 2A is in Second Amendment. Number 2, letter A, which is the very first one in the English alphabet, radio.com. Bill@2aradio.com. Hopefully we have that covered. Now, I get an email from Eric Severson. Eric was the shoot boss, a.k.a. rangemaster in a lot of different arenas, but shoot boss for the Appleseed Project course that I and my friend Scott took about a month ago or so, I guess, maybe 5-6 weeks ago. Eric lives, he's out of the Ridgecrest, California area, a nice conservative region of California, kind of the high desert, conservative. The sheriffs there tend to give out they tend to issue and grant concealed weapons permits without much hubbub, almost kind of a shall issue system. So it's a good positive area of California, if there are very many, when it comes to being politically speaking. Scenically, you would not go visit Ridgecrest, California, unless, of course, you're going to China Lake Naval Air Station. Anyhow, with that being said, Eric sends me an email and asks me what I think of these and leaves a link. It goes to Surefire, and what it is it's the Surefire 4-end. He has a Mossberg 590, I believe, shotgun, 500 or 590, and he's looking to get the 4-end that you would actually rack for the pump action that comes with a flashlight attached to it, made and sold by Surefire. And they're really neat. I have one on my Remington 870. And you have a couple of different switches. On the right side of this, you have an actual on-off switch where you could turn this light on and leave it on and then hit the other button and turn it right back off. On the other side, if you're right-handed, that switch would be close to your index finger and middle finger. It'd be right around there if you slid them forward a bit. On the left side, kind of a little bit higher up across the entire length, so depending on where your hand grabs, all you have to do is rotate your thumb up a little bit to touch it, is a pressure pad, which would be a momentary on-off. You just add pressure, take the pressure off. Add pressure, light comes on, take pressure off, light goes off. So, excellent forends. And they're a little pricier. I don't know, I forget, like maybe $240, $250. So, that lighted forend is about as much as the base gun itself. But keep in mind, I mean, shotguns, $200, $240, they're not expensive items when you go for like a Remington 870 or a Mossberg 500, Mossberg 590. And so the lighted forend is what Eric is looking at. You know, what do you think about these? Well, I have one on my Remington 870 defense shotgun. I've got the 18-inch barrel on it. I've got the lighted forend. You know, just the side saddle, which attaches to the left side of the receiver, which will hold 6 rounds. I've got the pistol grip style stock, and it is a youth style speed feed stock, so it actually it's got a proper length of pull. I've got the ghost ring sights on it, and that's where it's got a round aperture in the rear on the back of the receiver, and then a post up front at the end of the barrel. The barrel has the Van Comp system on it, so it holds a tighter pattern and keeps recoil down on the 12 gauge. And also the sights have tritium inserts, so they can be used at night. All of that and a good tactical sling on it. So that's the shotgun I've got. Eric's looking at putting something similar together with his Mossberg. So yeah, absolutely. Those Surefire lighted and lighted forends are great. They also make them for some of the fixed-stocked, like the semi-auto version of some of these guns, like some of the semi-automatic guns where you can actually put the forend on there and then have the light. They do come with those. There's all types. This is a very good lighted forend for a pump shotgun. It's good for any shotgun, but there's a lot of options for the semi-auto. So we're going to stick with the pumps for the moment. So, yes, absolutely, those are great forend. There is an issue that I have seen and experienced myself. That is, these high-output bulbs in these particular shotguns. With a fair amount of shooting under your belt, Those bulbs break. They quit working. The inner filament, whatever it is, and these high-output little mini bulbs, they go out. So the correct solution is, and I don't know if they sell the guns like this or if you have to buy a retrofit little lens area, that is to get the LED front end. Now, Surefire makes some really excellent LED lights. They have pretty much led the industry when it comes to the LED technology. Surefire, the stuff that you buy from Surefire is more expensive than what you would buy from some of the competition. And, now like Streamlight. I have some Streamlights. I have some Surefires. I have some of the, you know, the $20 version of these $60 lights that you can get at Walmart, including the batteries. I have all of them. I have just a plethora of these different sorts of tactical type lights. Surefire has some excellent research, and you end up with benefits from the product, such as the distance that the beam will travel, how tight the beam actually is at distance, things like that, that you just don't get at a lot of the other companies, because the technology that they use, they really refine. That being said, they are a leader in the LED technology for these tactical type of lights, ultra bright, highly concentrated lights. If you get the lighted forend for a shotgun, or you have the lighted shotgun for a shotgun, my suggestion is to get the replacement end cap that has the LED light on it. All right. I had my Remington 870 shotgun, and I had that in my car. I was teaching an advanced tactical, like once a year, 4-day shotgun class for all these high speed, low drag shotgun students, right? I'm teaching this class. I have my 870 in the car, and Dave Champion, who hosts his show from 3 o'clock Central, Monday through Friday here on RBN. By the way, I'll be sitting in for Dave later today. So if you want to hear me yak and spew a little bit more about things other than guns, tune in. I'll be there. Anyhow, Dave brought his pet Remington 1100, which is an excellent tactical shotgun. He had the whole thing set up. He had had a couple things done to it. And if I remember right, the semi-auto bolt knob that you can actually run the bolt with, just peeled right out. So he couldn't use the gun. And this is right off the bat. This is, you know, a few shots into the course of a 4-day course. So I lent him my 870 for the duration of the course. And at the end of the course, the bulb in the lighted forend was broken. Well, that's just because it went through a lot of pounding and a lot of stuff. So I experienced that it wasn't working. So I had a replacement bulb. I put another bulb in there. I have since retrofitted it to have the LED. Now, that LED has been in that shotgun and been shot plenty, and it still works. So the LED is not going to break. It's a light-emitting diode. Essentially, what you've got is you've got some different... it's almost like a piece of fiber optic that emits light, only several of them, and they're ultra-bright and ultra-concentrated. So if you're going to get that lighted forend, get one with the LED lamp already on it, or if they don't sell it with the lamp already on it, order the lamp as an extra and replace it out with the one that's on there. Then, if you buy... Actually, you know what you could do? I tell you what, this is even better. Because you should have one of those small... They're usually about 4 inches long, 5 inches long, one of these small Surefire lights. Get one where the head is the same size as the one that's on the shotgun. And you just buy the LED handheld light. Exchange that head off with the one that's on the shotgun. Put the one from the shotgun onto the handheld light, and now it is the bright kind of a, I forget what the type of bulb is called. The word is escaping what type of bulb. It's not incandescent. Halogen. I think it's a little mini halogen bulb. That's what it is. That will actually be your handheld light. While you've got the LED one on your shotgun, everything works out. You're not extra any parts, so consider that. Anyhow, so Eric, I send him that information. He sends me a response email a day or two later that says, hey, guess what? I got myself my own little Christmas present today. Evidently, he ordered said 4-inch. So, if you happen to have a pump-action shotgun, and you want to have the dedicated light on the fore-end, the Surefire system is the best thing that I have ever found on the market. It is the most durable thing I've found on the market. It can be made even better if you put the LED head attachment on the light so that that high-output miniature halogen bulb doesn't break. All right. Again, I've experienced it. I've seen other people experience it as well. So, please, heed the warning because Murphy, and I'm going to hunt this SOB down sometime, this Murphy guy, Murphy and his laws are the most accurate things known to mankind. As a matter of fact, Murphy's laws probably should have been Adam's laws because they've probably been true for all of time for mankind. So, anyhow, the point being, if you're going to go out, you're going to do some training, shooting the gun, it might be in the car, in and out, whatever, jostled around a little bit, even though those mini halogen light bulbs are very, very durable, at the moment you need it most, it's not going to work. I've experienced that with so many different lights in tactical situations, it's ridiculous. So go for the LED end. Point made. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys. Now, you'll remember that it was 2 weeks ago now. I was in Las Vegas, 2 weeks ago today, in Las Vegas, and observed a cop driving like a complete jackass, all kinds of different violations. To which I took down all the information, I sent it off to the sheriff's office, outlining all of the issues that this cop had done, and how I am now requesting to perform a citizen's arrest via that of signing the citations for all the multiple moving violations of this cop, because he was not rolling code, and it looked as though he was going to lunch because he met another cop at a Taco Bell parking lot. I don't really care what he was doing. He wasn't rolling code. He was violating department policy, which, you know, I mean, that's their issue. But he was violating law. And there's been four Las Vegas Metro cops have died this year. Now, that's almost as many as have died in the last 20. But four have died this year. Four Las Vegas Metro department employees. One was a corrections officer, two were cops. And then a third cop was killed by gunfire outside of his house. Evidently, he was about to be the victim of a home invasion and got caught up in the gunfire, delivered some out, got some back. Anyhow, three different cops, well, two police, one corrections officer, died driving inappropriately. It was all their faults, their own faults, the way they were driving. They died. So I wrote a, I don't know, 5 or 6 paragraph email to the sheriff letting him know, look, evidently this is not sunk in. This car, here's the unit number, this time, this date, this is what was going on. I want to sign the citizen's arrest on the citation for this cop. Because evidently that form of justice might sink in. Because okay, being unsafe is not worth the life and safety of this cop, any of the other citizens around. Nobody. This community has suffered enough from this. Let's knock it off. So, as it turns out, about a week later, I get an email that was unsigned, but from the Internal Affairs Bureau, asking me for my address and phone number. So, you know, my official address is a P.O. box. That's what they got. The phone number went through. I did get a call asking a question, something about the unit number. It was 10085. In fact, it was 10065, and that was through my own typing mishap. So anyhow, I was filling in for Dave last week on Friday, I think it was. I think I was sitting in for Dave on Friday. And I was talking about how it had been 10 days since this whole thing had happened. It had been 8 days since I sent in the email. And it had been probably 3 days since I had responded with my address and phone number. And actually, just as the show was ending, like 5 minutes towards the end of that show, a voicemail came in from the internal affairs detective asking me to call back something about, you know, this unit number. So it's kind of funny because it was a speak of the devil sort of thing. I did call back, left a message. He got a hold of me. We got the unit number squared away, and he tells me, you know, it might be like another, with the holidays coming up, another week or two before we get this thing totally figured out. Okay, great. All you got to do is you got to call the Erie Command, talk to the person that actually has a copy of the vehicle logs, and say, who had this vehicle at this time on this day? That's how quick and easy and simple it is. But no, we're going to wait, we're going to wait, we're going to wait. So it's just not being handled efficiently. It's going to get handled because I'm not going to let it drop. It's just not being handled efficiently. So I actually got an email from a listener who listened to that show. Again, if you didn't hear it, I would suggest going to the archives or going to the DaveChampionShow.com, DaveChampionShow.com, and listen to last Friday. It says, hi, Bill, just a thought regarding your quest to bring the unbridled cops into line. Rather than chance a complaint migrating through internal affairs and creeping up or stagnating in the chain of command, make a tape of the show that I had done, and float it among the local news media with the suggestion that a breaking news team be allocated exclusively for this task. With their cooperation and potential rating soar due to the disgruntled public, I think you'll get much more traction in this task. Rat the bastards out. Now, so his idea is for somebody to get a hold of your local news media in your area. Take a copy of that show. Say, look, listen to this. This is what we're talking about. You guys put it out there. If you, the citizens, see the police breaking the law, just plain breaking the law, and you want to do some sort of citizen's arrest on them, get all the information, call us. We will come out there, and we will assist you in trying to get the, you know, like the person's sergeant, their lieutenant, or the watch commander out there, and actually perform a citizen's arrest right then and there on the cop with the media right there. So, interesting idea. I may float that around. We're going to see how all this goes. If things go smoothly and all this goes fine, I'll report to the media afterwards. If I start hitting bumps and hurdles and people getting in the way and trying to stall and stagnate this thing, I'll get the media involved beforehand, before it's over, to try and help me out in getting it done. But the only people that are going to keep the police in line are we, the citizens. We're going to talk a little bit more about that when we return from the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. So, my whole thought on this deal is this. When the police get out of line, who polices the police? Well, it's always been internally, through internal affairs. Well, I've always found it, as a former cop, I have always found it difficult to believe that any form of justice is served when the police police themselves. When law enforcement actually enforces their own standards of conduct, I find that difficult because the standards of conduct in the law enforcement community if it warrants investigation. That's because there is a poor standard of conduct. And unfortunately, the way that the police are managed, the way that they are allowed to operate, there is a real problem with being able to get legitimate people to look from the inside of what's going on in their own department and do an internal investigation. It's very difficult. It's possible. It is possible. A good friend of mine and his father, well, they have both become good friends of mine. His father is a captain, the administrative captain for one of the smaller kind of offshoot departments within the area of the city of Los Angeles. And he handles the internal things for his department. And this particular guy, this captain, is one of the most upstanding people I've ever met. I mean, just a very, very solid human being. And also the type of guy that is not afraid to stand up and say, look, this is just plain wrong. Or, look, this is right because of that. Even if it's an unpopular decision or an unpopular thought, he's going to stand up and tell you exactly what he thinks and exactly the way it goes down. And he's going to have the nuts to stand behind it and prove it and show you, take you by the hand. So when it comes to internal type of investigations, this is the type of guy that we as the citizens would like doing it on the side of the police. The thing to understand is that this is a very rare individual in law enforcement. And they're certainly not throughout the entire department, especially when you have supervisors looking into their own guys. Because on this, let's say you have on the street, you have a squad. You've got the squad is managed by a sergeant, and this sergeant might have, I don't know, anywhere between, say, 4 and 20 or 24 patrol officers underneath him. Depends on the city and where the squads are. In Vegas, the squads are usually between 12 and 18 people, all right? And you have a sergeant. Maybe they're between even 10 and 18, depending on the time of day, how big the squad is, the area that you're covering, blah, blah, blah. So if the sergeant's going to investigate, just remember, that officer, that sergeant has to be able to rely on that officer to back them up and vice versa. So even though there might be a little bit of static back and forth, it's generally not going to be too big. You never really know, but oftentimes it's going to be, look, let's just handle this between us, okay? I'm going to do you a favor by keeping this thing down. I'm going to need to call in a favor. It's like the Godfather. It's like, you come to me, you ask me for this favor. I, too, may need to come to you someday and ask you for a favor. So one of those sorts of things, right? So my whole thought on this deal is, the citizens of the United States, we the people, we have the power and authority to perform a citizen's arrest on anyone who violates any law. Okay, understand that. There's almost nothing that the police have the power and authority to do that we the citizens don't. The only real thing that's coming to mind right now is to execute a search warrant. A judge is not going to give a citizen, a private citizen, a search warrant to execute, to investigate a crime. A search warrant based on probable cause. They're not going to do that. You're going to have to be a cop to do that. With that exception, if you see a law being broken, you have the power and authority vested in you as a citizen of the United States to perform a citizen's arrest. If it happens to be an on-duty police officer that is violating the law, you have the power and authority to arrest them. Now, it's all about how to go about it that you want to do. You don't want to just go up to a cop and say, officer, I just observed you violating this, that, and the other law. I'm performing a citizen's arrest on you right now. Okay, that's not going to get you very far because that cop's going to basically be pissed off. Well, who do you think you're doing? No. Now, I'm going to find a way to arrest you on a POP, which is pissing off the police. A POP charge. We want to avoid that. Gather all the information. If it's something that has to be handled right now, you call the non-emergency dispatch number. You say, I, right now, need to perform a citizen's arrest on one of your officers. I need to have a supervisor and the watch commander come to this location right now. And it's also best if you can identify the cop or the ID number, the vehicle that they're driving, or you've got an officer at this location. I need you to identify that officer, have him stay there, and I need to have a supervisor and a watch commander come out right now because I fully intend to perform a citizen's arrest on this officer for violation of this, that, and the other law. Now, here's the thing. You can't just see that they did something and you want to arrest them. You have to really know what the law is. You would have to be familiar with the law. If it's something simple like changing lanes in an intersection, guys, please. Let's keep this down. I mean, the guy that I am looking to get was actually officially hitting what's called, unsafe driving, right? I think that's it. That's where there was multiple moving violations all at the same time. So, and it's already cost three other cops on that department their lives. Did you know that 60%, 6 out of 10 law enforcement officers who die while on duty are due to traffic accidents? If the cops themselves drove better. Now, we're considering that maybe, 20% of that 60% might be the fault of others. All right, so let's say that 80% are when the cops are actually behind the wheel and they're trying to do something risky and it doesn't work out. Did you know we could literally cut the number of officer fatalities in this country in half, if the officers drove more responsibly? Now, keep in mind, there's citizens that are being injured and killed by the actions of officers behind the wheel. Very dangerous and lousy situation. I'll give you another example of where a perfect opportunity for a citizen's arrest would be. That was this jackass off-duty cop in Washington, D.C. that stopped his Hummer and got out with a gun in his hand because people were throwing snowballs at cars and his car got hit. He comes to a snowball fight with a gun in his hand. That is called brandishing a weapon. And if I happened to be there, I would have done a citizen's arrest on this cop for brandishing a weapon. If any citizen could not get away with doing something that a cop is doing, well, you could arrest them. If any citizen would otherwise be arrested for conduct, if a cop saw a citizen doing something and would arrest them for that, and I'm not talking just a citation, but literally, consider putting them in cuffs and taking them in. That's the way this cop in Vegas was driving. Any other cop would have stopped him, and very potentially taken them into custody because they're driving like such an a-hole. If you see a cop doing something that a citizen would be arrested for doing, consider performing a citizen's arrest on that cop. Sometimes it might need to be done the way I'm doing it, through some sort of contact. Look, I wasn't going to handle it right then and there, but this is my full intent. I saw this officer at this time doing this act, violating these laws. I intend to perform a citizen's arrest. I would like to, I'm informing your department of that. Let's get this lined up. You're now responsible for helping me with this investigation and getting this done. That is going to be the way to keep these cops reined in. Because I gotta tell you guys, have you ever been in a job where you are supposed to regulate yourself? Like you are kind of your own supervisor, you really have to keep yourself in line? Can anybody do that without occasionally stepping over the line or not actually getting something done that they should get done? The reason is what gets measured gets done. In some police departments, they measure a lot, so the cops stay in line a lot better. In some other departments, the cops don't get measured much, and it's hog wild. I mean, it's Old West sort of days. There's some departments out west, out here, some small sheriff's departments that are just, I mean, it's almost like Cowboyville. It really is. There's not a bunch of checks and balances in there. And the fish stinks at the head. That comes from the top down. If the sheriff's not getting his job done, if the sheriff himself is not regulating what's going on, it's not going to filter down. You know, when you're given a badge, a gun, and a car that can roll code, and kind of free rein to go out and do your job without a bunch of supervision, without a bunch of checks and balances, you're going to end up with some cops that are just over the line. They're not doing their job effectively. They're just out of line. If you experience cops doing this kind of thing, do not be afraid. And I'm being the test case here for you guys. I'm not afraid to mix it up. I'm not afraid to mix it up at all. As a matter of fact, if I don't mix it up often enough, I feel like I start to lose my edge. I have to mix things up a few times a year. I have to get into the mix of something. I have to make some sort of noise, rattle some kind of a cage every now and again. I feel like I'm not doing my part. And I'm not being malicious or vindictive. I'm just doing my part. When three of this cop that I watch, when three of his colleagues, comrades, one of them, at least one, worked out of the same area command that he did. The first one to die this year worked out of the same area command. Because they're driving improperly. And they kill themselves while on duty, driving improperly. And this jackass goes about doing the same thing, not learning the lessons of the other three dead officers, two of which are still fresh in their minds because they just happened within the last 6 or 8 weeks. All right? That's when I'm going to get involved, which is exactly what I'm doing. And the unfortunate part is, this internal investigation is taking so long, dragging their feet. 2 weeks in now, this cop has no idea that I'm trying to perform a citizen's arrest on him. It's been 2 weeks. This happened on a Wednesday night. They got the email on Friday morning. All right? Let's say the internal affairs detective didn't get it until Monday. All right? To find out the vehicle ID number, and of course I mess it up, but I mean it's literally a phone call. You call the area command, hi, this is Detective So-and-so, Internal Affairs. I would like you to open up the vehicle checkout sheet for this particular date. Swing shift, and tell me who had this vehicle. What time do they check it out? What time do they turn it in? Great. Excellent. Now, you can call dispatch and say, this unit ID, this particular cop, tell me what they were doing between 8 and 9 p.m. All their assignments, they were at lunch, whatever it was. Easy enough. I don't think that they actually do GPS on these cars. Otherwise, you could really just, I mean, dial it in. Yes, he was here at this time. Okay? But it's literally, I mean, all of the phone calls dealing with all this stuff at the very outside. I mean, the longest amount of time, if somebody had to get back to you, would take an hour. Take an hour. If you actually got people on the phone, it could probably be done in about 5 minutes. Okay, probably 5 actual minutes. So, please consider doing this. Because if the cops are going to get out of line and stay out of line, they're going to be tasing the hell out of 10-year-old kids. They're just going to be hogwild about tasing you. You know, just taking their authority well beyond its intended use, then it's up to us to deal with it. Another thing that actually drives me nuts is when police talk about their right to do this and their right to do that. I recently, just yesterday actually, read there's a police department in California that one of the deputy chiefs, I think it was, put out a training memo dealing with the open carry laws in California. They have an open carry law where you can carry an unloaded gun in a holster, exposed. And you can have ammunition with you. You can have speed loaders or magazines on your belt as well, so you can insert, run the action, and go. And that's about the best you're going to get in California. But it's talking about how to deal with these people and such. And in there, it talked about, you know, as the police, we do not have the right to do this, but we do have the right to do that. The police, when they're actually working in the capacity, when you are working under the color of office, you got your uniform on, you got your badge, you got your gun, you're on the clock. You don't have any rights at all. You have power and authority. And power and authority is far, far less than a right. Police, when they're on duty, don't have any police rights. They have powers, they have authorities, which are adjustable by us, we the people, through the people that we elect and pass laws legislatively and act through the executive office, and the judicial powers that be can interpret the powers that the police have. Rights are unalienable. They are unchangeable. Nobody gives them to you. You're born with them. Police don't have any rights. They have power and authority. And power and authority is so much further down the rung than rights. So if a cop ever tells you, look, as a police officer, I have the right to da-da-da, let them know. You have no rights at all. You have power and authority. I'm the one with rights. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. A little update here. I just got a message from Dave Champion. It appears as though I will not be doing his show today. He's been, he's going to be doing his thing in Las Vegas tomorrow, so it will not be today. So Dave will be on today, 3 o'clock Central Time. All right. Monday, there was a release of the FBI of preliminary crime data for the first 6 months of 2009 and just poked a mammoth-sized hole in the bag of hot air carried around by gun prohibitionists. Not surprisingly, since the Seattle Times and other news outlets reported on Monday, there has not yet been a single peep about it from the anti-gun lobby. According to the FBI, murder in this country declined by 10% overall for the first half of 2009, a period of booming gun sales that primarily focused on the purchases of two types of firearms most demonized by the anti-gun scuzz. That's the semi-automatic sport utility rifles and handguns. Alan Gottlieb of the Second Amendment Foundation says the following. Anti-gunners have lost another one of their baseless arguments. Millions of Americans bought guns during the first 6 months of this year, many of them for the first time. Yet with all those new guns in circulation, coupled with an increased demand for concealed carry licenses around the country, the streets have not been awash in blood, as some gun banners repeatedly predict. The National Sports Shooting Foundation commented on the situation and also supplied data on the FBI's National Instant Check System that shows how firearm sales were up in most months dramatically over the same months in 2008. And Alan Gottlieb, again, he is the founder and executive vice president of the Second Amendment Foundation, was quick to observe, what this shows is that gun prohibitionists are all wrong when they argue that more guns will result in more crime. Hard facts trump hot air. These people are consistently wrong about our rights. Millions of people bought guns, especially semi-automatic sport utility rifles that gun grabbers want to ban because they say people aren't safe with all of those guns in private hands. Well, the people disagree, and so does the data. Now, the Second Amendment Foundation, of course, put out a press release. And who has responded? Who in the anti-gun community has responded to this? Have we heard anything out of, let's say, the Brady campaign to steal all away your gun rights? No. Have we heard anything out of the Let's see. The Violence Policy Center? No, we haven't heard anything out of them. How about the Southern Poverty Law Center to disrupt and corrupt data to try to make you think communist? No, haven't heard anything out of them either. Nicely done, guys. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thanks very much, guys. Stay tuned for the Lendman News Hour coming up next, followed by the Ernie Hancock Show.
We'll be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.